Hello, everybody. It's Japanese Labor Prison Podcast. I didn't know what else to call this, but Japanese Labor Prison is essentially the end game, is to get to that part of the story. I mean, I've had a lot of life after that now, but still, you know, you got to move on. But I'm sure if you made it this far, you've probably understood that I'm breaking down my life and my relationship with Japan. And we're almost to one where I actually do have some success in Japan, business-wise. I mean, I've already been working with a company that we're going to go into right here. This kind of, I don't know whether they call this episode Two Backpacks and a Pillow or Seedless Life, because I like Two Backpacks and a Pillow better than the San Diego move, which is what I kind of wrote in Seedless Life. And the reason I wrote Seedless Life is pretty much because they need a whole episode. That I did a lot. I had a lot of fun working for Seedless. I can't emphasize how much they changed my life, really. But we'll get to that. We're gonna get to that. But I, the last episode, I had to say sorry because I didn't really say bye. I just went to an hour and stopped. I kept talking. I went on and on, and I didn't realize that it had stopped. So I went and listened to it, which I typically do anyway, because, you know, you should. If you make something, you don't have to edit it, but at least listen to it. Make sure you didn't ruin it. Make sure the sound wasn't too far off. All right, so where I was leaving, I was about to ride the train. So I did this last time. Before I get into the story, I did this last time. I kind of touched on the Japanese labor prison part, because if you got somebody locked up over there and they don't know what's going on, you might be the only source of information. And basically, if they got locked up, they got arrested, and they got let go, and then they got rearrested pretty much, and they never got let go, and they went to county, essentially, they're going to prison. And if you go to a Japanese labor prison for more than a year, you're not allowed back, ever. So like me, I'm banned for life, which is a shame because I speak, read, and write Japanese. Peta peta janai kata dai mahana sato honto da kato. I don't think you guys know Japanese, so I shouldn't just ramble off in Japanese. But I don't know. Well, I guess I'll just wait. We're getting closer and closer to the actual one, so let's just get this story moving and kind of recap on. So I wanted to finish with me making it to New Orleans. The last episode, and that's kind of where I did finish. So we got really close. I kept talking because I can talk. But the train ride, so I was in L.A. I'd already gone from New Orleans. Let's recap that, too. The whole Ramtrak episode was about me getting on the train, going from New Orleans to California to basically meet up. I don't know. I met a bunch of people. I met some people. I met a friend in San Diego, and then I met a bunch of the Seedless guys on that trip. And then I went up to Oregon. I met, had fun in LA, came back down to LA from Oregon, and I was in LA, and I was gonna get on the train to go to fucking Mississippi, really, but we're going to New Orleans first, because that's where I know I'm gonna get a ride from Michelle, most likely. I knew she's gonna be at work. She typically was over there all the time anyway. One of the girls would have been there if I walked in. I'd have known somebody, most likely. And so I got my train ticket. I probably have like $60 left after all this traveling around. I got $60. I left with like $6,000. And I got like $60. Two backpacks right now. I hadn't accumulated the pillow. But this while I'm standing in line for the train, I already bought my ticket. I got my $60, like I said. I ain't holding out in there, but I'm just standing there. Waiting for the train line to move forward. And then this girl walks up. She's got this tattoo. I guess a big weed leaf tattoo on her hip. I mean, there's no missing it. There's no missing this tattoo. I'm like, what the hell? And she walks up. She's like, hey, is this the train? And now I'm, you know me. I said, hell yeah, this is your train. Because she was kind of cute. So I was like, yeah, this is your train. But let's check, make sure it really is. Let me see your ticket. And it turned out it really was her train. She was going to... Oh, San Antonio, Texas, and I was going to New Orleans, so we're on the same route. We're going to be on the train for a while, and we made friends pretty quickly. Ramtrak doesn't necessarily go all the way with her. We did make out because she had a sleeping car, but we didn't really do anything further than that, other than just kind of make out and bullshit like that. But we had fun on the train anyway. We're just having a blast in general. Except for, oh shit, whenever we were in Tucson, Arizona, on the way back, like we had left LA, made bullshit, made other friends. Like there's a bunch of people to make friends with on the train. You go to the bar and you just start talking to people. It's pretty cool. Everybody's going somewhere. They got a story. It's pretty interesting, actually. And most people are willing to talk about it. Like not too many people are dicks on the train. Like they're usually pretty cool. But I wanted to smoke a bowl outside of the train instead of in the bathroom and shit, you know. So like I told you before, like in the last episode I mentioned that. But essentially like I stepped off the train, smoked a bowl, didn't even trip about it, hopped back on the train. Me and that girl, she went back to her car, like her sleeping. She had a sleeping car. I hadn't weaseled my way into the sleeping car yet, but I had desires upon sleeping in the sleeping car that night instead of in the chair. But she went back there. I went to like the observation deck, which is just basically a train car with big windows. Like it's like even on the roof is kind of windows, so you can see up to the sky and then far out. It's really cool. That's where they have the movies play at night and stuff. It's a pretty cool little room. You gotta have that type thing. Can't just be sitting in your chair all day. While I was sitting there though, two men stepped right up next to me. Boom, either side. Boom, boom. I'm like, what the hell? And both of them flash badges and they say DEA. I'm like, oh shit. I look up, now you heading to New Orleans? I was like, oh, I'm heading to New Orleans. And they're like, would you come with me to your seat? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, oh fuck, man, what the fuck? And then I'm sitting there, I was kind of buzzed, but that went away real quick. And then like there was another guy that was going to New Orleans too, and we were sitting next to each other for some reason. We just ended up, he's like, man, you had me scared, bro. I don't know what's going on here. And then they searched my two bags and they found like 1 little gram of weed and a pipe and my scales. And they're like, what's this about? I was like, well, this, I don't know. It's my weed. Like I have some weed left over. I didn't smoke it all. I just kind of want to take some home with me. They're like, well, this is all you got? You don't have any more? Like, son, we're not looking for personal. And I'm like, well, that's all I got, buddy. It's like, I ain't got nothing for you. I don't have any pounds or nothing. But they still took all my stuff. Then they have the nerve to ask me if I wanted a receipt. And I thought about it real quick and processed. Oh, no, I don't want no ticket, pretty much. No, sir. I'm good. No, thank you. And they left me alone. I got to stay on the train, head to New Orleans. And that dude from New Orleans looking at me like I was crazy. The maid damn near gave me a heart attack, bro. Like, I don't need this shit. I was like, man, I was trying to bring some weed home. They ruined my shit. Sons of bitches. They took my weed, man. They took all my weed, man. Although it wasn't much. There wasn't much, but it was some stanky stanky. It was that skunk. It was that real good. Nothing you could do about it though. They took it. And I wasn't gonna argue, it's all right. They left me on the train. They could have arrested me, probably, you know what I mean? The Arizona laws. I don't know what's going on over there, whether they like weed or not. But the train ride home, other than that, it was fairly uneventful, other than talking my way into the sleeper car. Although nothing went too far with her. There's reasons for all that. But recap, the Ramtrak from yesterday, two backpacks. Basically, I make it to New Orleans. The reason I want to, like after that girl got off in San Antonio, and like we slept in the car train sleeper car, and then we went out to have breakfast, and we were pretty much there. Like we were in San Antonio. And she gave me her pillow, which was really nice because I still had a pretty long way to go because Texas is long. And then everything just seems to take a while on the train. So I was happy to have that pillow. And then whenever I made it to New Orleans, it was nighttime, probably about midnight. And I got off the train and I walked my happy ass over to Temptations on Bourbon Street and started looking for Michelle. That dude didn't know who the hell. The bouncer was like, I don't know who Michelle is. I don't know any of their real names. I just know their dancer names. I was like, bro, I don't know her dancer name. I don't come here that much. Like, I'm coming here to get a ride home to Mississippi. and she's here, and I know it. And sure enough, like one of the girls, he didn't help me, but one of the other girls, like, saw somebody was looking for her and went and told her. And she came out, and I was, Michelle, she's all excited. Like, I'd been gone for, like, 2 months. She was a good friend of mine from, like, junior high, high school, all this stuff. Like, she was my girlfriend for, like, a week or something like that. But, you know, we're all just homies after a while. It was like a clique of, like, seven of us. It was, like, three girls and four guys, and we were just always kind of together. And that was our crew. And they ended up being strippers, and they would get us fucked up. They would always have the hookup on everything. They're badass hustlers. And Michelle was, I'm sure she still is a badass hustler, but, you know, motherfuckers got to keep the hustle up. She had a house before anybody had a house. But so I see her, and I give her my bags. I'm like, here, hold my bags. Oh, here's a pillow. Two backpacks and a pillow. And I give them to her, and she takes them. I'm like, I need $100. She just hands me $100. I'll pay you back. She knew I was good for it. And she told me she'd be off about 4. So I just went and bounced around Bourbon Street till about 4 in the morning off that $100 and spent all of it. Had a good time. Had a blast. Went and got me some hand grenades. Pounded those down. Didn't give no money to strippers. Tell you that. Can't be giving a stripper's money to another stripper. They probably get mad at you. I don't know. They might cut you. They might cut you on one of them. But I'm back to New Orleans. She gets off. And then basically I find a bag of weed in my backpack. I forgot all about it. It's an ounce of Mecki weed, like some brick Mexican weed. Like there's like it's like fucking brick. And but I just had a chunk of it still. The cops never found that. I don't know how the DEA, they looked all through it. But I think they just looked in my bag, and whenever they realized there wasn't like a pound in there, because it probably looked funny. I had two backpacks. Then maybe I thought I looked funny, but I don't know. I didn't carry anything, but I did have that little bit of weed. And then me and it was like an ounce. It wasn't a little bit. It was like a good solid chunk. I even gave it to her, and like she was like, you know, take half of that off my what I owed her and shit. I was like, okay, cool, that's great. Here you go. But we smoked blunt on the way home. By the time we got home, it was daylight for sure. And I forget. Oh yeah, my phone had just recently like went out of service or something like that. So I had her take me to the homie's house, pick up my money. I left the weed there because I didn't need it. I went and picked up all my money. I don't need to tell you how much it was. No need to brag about it. It wasn't that much. But it was enough to get started again. And I did. As soon as I got the money, then when I got my phone, I went to the Sprint store and I was waiting for it to open. And then right next door, I didn't even think about it, but the ex-girlfriend, the girl that I was living with whenever I left for California before I left, and she was all mad at me. We broke up on the phone like long before. She threw all my shit out and shit. Like, this is the girl that I was supposed to leave all my thousands with. It wasn't like it was 10,000, but it was a good chunk of fucking money. I wasn't going to give it to her and then have her fucking have a fit just like she did. And, I mean, rightfully so. She absolutely should have a fit. I was off doing Ramtrak things, so there's no way I was in the right on that. When I seen her, she saw me, and I looked over, and it was a dude dropping her off, and I knew that dude. I knew that dude. It was hilarious. I mean, I didn't care. What am I going to do, fight the motherfucker? But he's like, kind of scared. I was like, dude, I'm going to do nothing to you, man. Like, I got nothing to fight you over, man. I never understood that, fighting over some chick choosing up. Chicks are going to choose up. Don't get mad. Just let her do her thing. That's how it's going to go. You gotta come up with a better attraction. And she'll come flopping right back to you. Excuse me. I'd take a drink with some water. All right, so Michelle drops me off at that place. I see them. And then basically the hustle is back on. There's no fun time USA. There's no job. It's just me slinging weed again. And my buddy's like, man, you can't just come back and expect everything to just roll back into your arms and stuff. Bullshit. As soon as I went and bought another fucking 5 pounds, that shit was fucking flying off the shelves. I started fronting people. I started fronting all kinds of people. I started fronting there was two Hooters down there. And we had two Hooters. And both of them. I had Jamie in one, and I had who the hell was the other one? I forget. But either way, damn, I can't remember her name. But either way, I had somebody in both of those. Both those girls, I'd just give a QP, and they'd sell the weed to all the employees, and boom, I'd get my money. and they get to make some too, and I didn't care. But before I was doing all stacks, all quarterbacks, maybe a half, but rarely even an ounce. But now I'm just trying to do ounces and quarter pounds for the most part. But I still like that broke down money, so I was still driving those. But before I got to the quarter pounds in front and everybody, I had to get my name back up, or at least let people know I was back, and that I did. I couldn't drive the illegal Regal. My car was just a cop magnet. There's no riding around and hustling in that. So I had to walk in Mississippi pretty much. But it was fall, so it wasn't too hot or nothing like that. But I'd walk. I'd leave the house with a pound in my backpack and have a scale. I'd have a pound in my backpack and I'd just go walking around. And it wasn't long before somebody called me. They picked me up, and then while I was dealing with them, my phone would blow up, boom. And then once it started rolling like that, all I would do, I would just walk out the house and meet somebody down the way. I never sold out of my house, kids. Don't sell out of your house, and they can never raid it. I mean, I'm sure they can. They can figure out ways if you fuck up, but don't sell out of your house. Don't sell out of your car if you got a G-Ride. Like, don't do it. So I always stayed on the feet, and I was in and out of other people's cars. They'd pick me up, drop me off at the next destination, or I'd just get out, and then whoever's calling me, just pick me up over here. I'll see you there. It was great for my exercise, too, because I was walking all the time. I was always moving. And then by the end of that, I had three cars, and I was still walking all the fucking time. It was crazy. Like, I'd have the Regal, and I'd go pull up to the homie's house, like, just kind of burn one. And then I'd drive back home, and I'd park it, and that'd be where that motherfucker stayed all day, because I'd leave with the backpack and just start walking. Everybody see me, they'd be, why you walking, man? You got, like, see this backpack, motherfucker. But I couldn't tell anybody either. And, like, not everybody knew. Like, a lot of people had no idea what the hell I did, because they all thought I did construction forever. So they didn't necessarily know that I was slanging or nothing. But it wasn't, I mean, I was moving a lot of weed. I don't feel like I was a drug dealer. I feel like I was a businessman. Because out here in California, that's legal now. It's not even a big ordeal, but I was moving about 10 pounds a week, and it was like a lot of quarter bags, ounces, and the QPs. I had a few bars I could just go sit in, and in fact, Ansley, I used to go sit in her bar at Orangutans all the time. She's a tall, beautiful drink of water. She was a good woman. She was a hustler from Georgia, a Georgia peach, some would say, but she was a really good girl, really nice person. Not really, I guess. She was kind of mean. I don't know. She was nice to me. She let me hustle out of the bar. She was a hustler. And then she was my homegirl, but we would hook up here and there, but nothing like girlfriend, boyfriend, nothing like that. She was on her own fucking kick. She was a player. But I would go to that bar mostly all the time. And then right after, actually, you never, hold on now. We had the Power Hour. I remember that place. What the fuck was that place called? It was right on the beach. But basically from midnight to 1 a.m., everything is a fucking dollar. Everything. Everything's a dollar. You just go in there, and you get fucked up. So all the service people would show up. All the girls would show up. It was the best bar ever because everybody's going to show up for Power Hour. You just count on it. Like, there's no other reason. Like, every bar probably gets emptied the fuck out because they're like, hey, let's go to Power Hour. We go up there and drink. And there's like a row of bars. There's a few bars in that spot. There ain't there no more. Hurricane Katrina wiped them motherfuckers out. But I can't remember the name of that place for the life of me. But Power Hour was the shit. I'd even leave her bar, go to Power Hour. But that bar stayed open until 6 a.m. Her bar would close at like 2, 3. If there was a lot of people, they could stay open that late. But she didn't ever want to stay open that late. She wanted to go do some shit. She wanted to go to the other bars. And that's typically where I kicked it with her, was after that. But I guess, you know, I'm floating around just grinding, man. I'm making money. Everything's going pretty good. The Seedless guys, they hit me up. And I've been, I don't know if you remember this from the last episode, but I mentioned that essentially there was a hoodie that I wanted, but they didn't have it printed. And now Rezwan calls me up and says, hey, you want that hoodie still? I'm like, well, yeah, what's up? He's all right, if you pick me up at the airport in New Orleans, I'll give it to you for free. I was like, oh, hell yeah, bet. So, we arranged whatever day they're showing up. I went over there and picked them up. And I brought some BC Bud that we had been getting, and they're kind of shocked. They're like, damn, I thought we were going to smoke in that brick weed all the time. I said, no, man, I got you. We got some weed. And I said, pleasantly surprised. We went bouncing around Bourbon Street and we went and saw Michelle and stuff, and we went to the Temptations. I took them to see Michelle and all those girls and stuff, and then we bounced around and like we started getting hand grenades. And I told them you can only drink two of those things. You're gonna do a shot too. You're gonna get fucked up. And then Greg kept drinking them. They're so delicious though. They are absolutely delicious. So you don't know how fucked up you are. You're having a blast. So you're having a goddamn blast. Good time. There's me, Muggsy, Rezwan. Not this time. Maybe. I think Muggsy came with me. He probably came with me because this is a long-ass ride. I'd rather just not be alone any goddamn way. A 45-hour-long drive. And then, I don't know, I guess not that long. It's really not that long. My grandma will have you parked on Bourbon Street in 45 minutes from her home. But she's got a heavy foot. She's going to drive fast. I think she knows all, well, she used to know all the politicians and all that stuff. But Greg, Bourbon Street got a hold of him, bro. He got the alcohol poisoning. And then we were going back and forth to the strip club and stuff. I remember one of the chicks, got Rez's phone number. He was all fucked up. Well, not Rez was fine, but Greg was fucked up. And essentially, we went to Michelle's house after Bourbon Street. Like, it was in Mississippi. We all met over at Michelle's house. Quite a few people were there. It was a great time even there. And then we needed some sleep, though, so we crashed. And then after we all woke up, Greg was all fucked off, throwing up. And like, oh, man, you got the poisoning, bruh. You got the alcohol. It's got a hold of you. But essentially, I took them to my apartment, where I was living with Chris, and we went and kicked it there, and then his ass was huddled on the couch for a while. But then me and Rez, we went and bounced around Mississippi. We went to the homie's barbecue spot, and then we bounced over. We just bounced around and see my homies and stuff, show him around, show him my old shit, take him around in G-Ride and shit. And then essentially... Oh, here's a story, I guess. Me and Rez, because Greg's all fucked up. Me and Rez driving around. We were going to get some money. Like, as soon as I got to Mississippi, I got handed money. And then I had to go do some more collecting as soon as I was rolling around. And then I get one call. I'm like, oh, hell yeah, this dude called me up. He had some of my money. So I went over there and picked it up. And it was like I'd fronted them a bunch of acid. And I had... That was probably the only other thing I ever bought. Other than that, I bought a bunch of acid. This guy knew how to get rid of it. I was like, okay, here, fucking just sell that shit. And then I sold some of it, but it took a while to sell all that stuff. I spent a lot of money on it, but it fucking more than doubled my money. I spent like $4,000 on it, maybe like $9,000. Or like it got me back $9,000, some $5,000 profit. But I went over there, picked up some money, and I'm telling you, this is one lane road. This is nighttime now. This is one lane dirt road. There's like trailers on the left side only, and then it's just woods on the right. It's like, what the fuck is going on? It's dark. It looks sketchy. And then we pull all the way to the back, and there's like one street light, and this thing's just above their trailer. I pull up, and Red's like, we're going to be all right, because there's like five dudes outside the trailer. All throwing up gang signs, not paying us no mind. They're just dancing themselves, throwing up gang signs, high on acid. It was the craziest thing I ever seen. Like, these thugs, like, typically black dudes don't do the acid. She's a white guy shit. I pull up, there's thugs galore in this motherfucker, high on acid. And then this biggest motherfucker after me and Rez step in, and it's my homie. He steps up to me and just hands me a gripping fucking money. Boom! He's like, we ain't gonna get some more of that shit. These niggas love this shit. I'm like, oh my God. You getting these guys on acid, bro? You don't need to do that shit. These motherfuckers are gonna go crazy. I know. he's all muscle bound and stuff. You wouldn't expect him to be wanting to do the acid and stuff. It was funny though, but Rez always talk about that stuff. He's like, man, remember that sketchy ass trailer park? Hell yeah, I do. Okay, so the trailer park. What else? So we go back and forth to New Orleans. They're there for a good long weekend, but we went to New Orleans on the first night whenever I picked them up, brought them back to Mississippi. And then while we were in Mississippi for one night, like we stayed there one night because they're going to leave the next night. So we'll go back to New Orleans and they can stay the night there, get a hotel and do all that stuff. What happened? Oh shit. But before we went to New Orleans, the one night in Mississippi, we're just out and about. We went to orangutans. They just basically saw the hustle, basically. They saw how much money I was making, how the grind was working, the whole fucking situation in the bar. And then that girl Angeli, that beautiful thing, she's like, "Hey Frankie," we're all playing pool and stuff. "I want you to take me to New Orleans. I've never been for Halloween. Can we go for Halloween like a date?" I'm like, "Hell yeah." In front of Rez too. I don't know, this dude pulls the most beautiful women always. His wife is beautiful now. He's married. He's got two beautiful daughters. But this guy always, just beautiful women surrounded him. And for him to be like, "Damn, Frankie, she's fine." And I was like, yeah, I felt like I was doing good. I felt like I was stunting a little bit. Because I seen him for like 3 weeks out in California doing his thing. And I was like, "All right, I see you. I see you." And then, so basically, yeah, she asked me to do that. I agree. And then I guess like the next night we went to New Orleans. Me, Muggsy. I don't think Muggsy was there the first night. Now that I think back. Me, Muggsy, Rez, and Greg went out and about, and we just had a blast, man. We went bouncing up and down Bourbon again. We went all over the place because you can. Like there's a whole lot to do. There's Fat City. There's all kinds of crazy shit. I got friends in Metairie and stuff, so we're bouncing around, doing what we do, getting fucked up and having a good time. And I remember meeting some girls that were on their way to California. And I was like, "Hey, you should link up with these guys. They're going to California." And we all ended up hanging out with them all night. And what the hell happened? Oh yeah, we went to their hotel room afterwards. Like it was like three, four guys and two girls. I wasn't expecting anything. We were just chilling, and it was kind of winding down. And one girl was really, really drunk, and Muggsy was trying to get with her. I was talking to her friend. She was kind of rude. She was a bitch. And fucking, I was actually talking to the one that's drunk. Now my buddy's trying to massage her and shit, getting weird. I'm like, "Oh man, we need to get the hell out of here." And I think, I don't know, I was fucked up. And I wrote, "What the fuck?" in their mirror, like WTF, and like some expensive MAC foundation stuff. That girl come out yelling, "Who the fuck did that? What the fuck is wrong with you guys?" And fucking, we kind of trashed their hotel and bailed. And then we bailed. We trashed the whole hotel on our way out too. We were a shit show. We were absolutely out of our minds. Muggsy got fucked. He was fucked up. He went to the car, and then we continued raging. And then I think me and Muggsy, yeah. So Muggsy, he went to the car. I went and walked these guys around Bourbon a little more, and then eventually I went to the car, and then we dipped. And those guys flew back to California, and they were trying to talk me in, and they're like, "You should just come live with us, man." I'm like, "I don't know, man. I got Mardi Gras coming and stuff. I want to see Mardi Gras again, and that's kind of my thing." This is in September. This is a pro. Well, not maybe like November. This was happening, and then me and him planned on meeting up in Vegas for New Year's Eve. He was like, "All right, we're gonna do some power traveling and stuff." Was, "All right, power travel. We're gonna do that." I was all about it. They were on board with it, and I thought it sounded fun. Go to Vegas. Looking, I'd never been to Vegas. Sounds awesome. I'm gonna fly to Vegas. Why? Because I got the money to do that. And I was like, "You can do it, right?" I was like, "Yeah." Well, I mean, I don't know. Anyway, I could stunt back then. I could definitely stunt, and I could do it. For a 22-year-old, I was doing all right money wise. But I did not make it. I bought the ticket, the plane ticket, and everything. And I don't know, man. Oh wait, well, I'm skipping ahead. I guess whatever. Me and Ainsley went to Halloween. It was crazy. We went to a rave, like and we did do Halloween. She dressed up as a damn as the devil, and I was in like Carhartt overalls, like a construction worker with nothing under it, just Carhartt overalls. And I was really warm actually, because those things work. But it was a cold night. But back to the subject at hand. Oh shit, before I skip ahead, this was a good Christmas. Me, BJ, and Lachdoc, because I had to move out from Chris's house. That dude was moving too much. Like, he had too many, he was moving coke and meth. And like, I wasn't on that vibe. And then I had too much money in there, so I had to dip. And which ended up being kind of interesting. But I ended up moving in with BJ and his girl Lachda before they ever got pregnant and stuff. And like we were a pretty tight crew playing Midnight, whatever that racing game was back then. Get low, get low, get low. Midnight something. I don't know, it's not Tokyo Drift, but it's along those lines. It's one of those kind of car games where you can build up and mod out your car. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Had a blast with it. I don't know how we could steer so fast and all that. It was insane. But, oh, yeah. The Christmas, we hooked each other up. We had a blast. And then New Year's, we were going to fucking blow up a bunch of fireworks. We spent so much money leading up to all that. And we blew them off right before I went to go to Vegas. But New Year's, Vegas, I get a friend, a so-called friend, give me a ride over to New Orleans. And then a friend of his had just gotten out of prison. I'd seen him before. I knew him in school, but we weren't exactly tight. But we weren't like, we didn't have any beef or nothing. But this dude just got out of prison. And this guy comes along for the ride. He has a girl with him. I'm telling him I'm going to go to fucking Vegas, go do some cool shit, some baller shit. These guys sitting back there scheming. He's like, oh, this motherfucker's got money. They took me to the hotel on Bourbon Street. I paid for the hotel, and I had to pull out, like, some of my money. He saw a little bit of it. And I took those guys over to Bourbon Street to have a fucking drink before I flew out. And I was going to fly out the next day, so I got a hotel, and I was just going to have fun that night. We go to the restaurant. We sit down. We're eating. And I get up, and, like, this is, like, after my meal's done. We got drinks going and stuff. And I hadn't even ordered the tab yet or nothing, but I go to the bathroom, use the restroom. As I'm peeing, I'm like, oh, fuck, my wallet's in my goddamn jacket. I run out of there. And then the motherfuckers left with my jacket. They stole my jacket with all my money in it. I ran out of the store. The police hit me up as soon as I run out, because they're like, they're running on the check. They're running on the check. I'm like, no, they stole my fucking money. Is what the fuck happened to me. I'm the one that gets hemmed up, and they get away with my money, and then they give them time to get away. They give these motherfuckers time to get away. I'm telling the cops, I'm like, y'all just helping these people get away with my money right now. They just robbed me right now. I was going to buy them dinner, and they robbed me. Why would they rob me? How much money? And I was like, $4,000? He's like, oh, why you got that much cash? I was like, I don't fucking know, man, because I was going to fucking gamble. It was a situation. They held me up. I ran to where the car was. It was gone. Long gone. Not going to see those guys for a minute, but I got a phone. So I call my buddy up and I tell him, keep an eye out on that dude's house. So he goes over to that exit and he keeps an eye on it. They never pull up. I guess they went and got a hotel is what I pieced together along down the line. But they went and got a hotel and they basically blew all that money up their nose. They went and snorted all that money up their damn nose. And I went on the hunt. I even hired a crackhead. He ended up hitting one of them with a car, and I told him to collect the money or whatever, but I told him keep whatever he collected once you told me about it. I gave him like $100 worth of crack, and that was my buddy's idea. He's like, yeah, man, get this guy on it, bro. He'll be sniffing them out, bro. He'll find them, bro. This is my dude. I was like, okay, we're going to put a hit on these motherfuckers. Let's do it. Put some money on these motherfuckers. And then myself, I went and sat in a bush one night waiting for him with a fucking ball peen hammer. I wasn't going to shoot nobody, but I was going to beat the fuck out of him. And he never showed up. He never came out. One time I was outside his house and I slashed his fucking tires and I told him to come outside. He wouldn't. I don't think he was there, though, because I was kicking on the door pretty fucking hard. But enough about that. I talked to Rez again that night too. My dad called me that night while I was in the hotel, like kind of fucking fuming. Not much I can do because I'm an hour away. And then eventually the next day my boy came and got me, but he couldn't get me right then. So I was stuck in New Orleans and my thoughts and stuff. And I talked to my father and I talked to my the homie Rez. And that night I was still hell-bent on fucking murder. But over time, I started talking to Rez again. He's like, just come live out here, man. It's like, it's really not worth it. It sounds like you're going to hurt him, and you're going to go to prison, and then you're not going to, you know, enjoy life. You're just going to be locked up over these fucking crackheads, essentially. Like, is it worth it? And I decided it's not worth it. The street cred rep game don't fucking matter. And now that I'm older, it really doesn't. I'm glad I didn't fucking go and do anything stupid. Those guys went and snorted their whole lives away. Fuck them. I've had a great life. I hear one of them's doing all right. That's happy for him. I've seen one of the other ones. He's not so well. Gulfport has not been kind to a lot of motherfuckers down there with the meth amphetamines and stuff. Those people are getting fucked up, man. That's how they roll, though. People are going to get fucked up. Ain't much you can do about it. But yeah, I got robbed, man. I got robbed for $4,000. And then I decided then and there, like, I need, or not then, but like down the line, I need to get out of there. And I have a job opportunity in San Diego, California. Why not hop on it? And I think that's a good time to take a break for this commercial thing. Let the alien say his piece. I'm just going to see how much time. 35 minutes. All right, that's a good time for a break. Break. All right. Don't mind the alien guy, bro. Anyway, so I take the job at Seedless, and but I tell him, wait till after Mardi Gras. And I took my boys to Mardi Gras, and we had a blast. I got a hotel right at the end of Bourbon Street on Canal. I think it was the Marriott. We were pretty high up. It was pretty cool. And it was definitely a great time. That city is live during Mardi Gras. When you're right there in the mix, it's just the best. It's the perfect place to be. And I had that hotel for probably like 3-4 days set up, so we were Gucci. I even left back to Mississippi to go to the Pass Parade, and then we came back to New Orleans for that night. And then essentially, I flew out of New Orleans. I never looked back. Like we did all the Mardi Gras, and then I flew out of New Orleans and just went to California. I landed in California. I flew this time right instead of the train. I flew to San Diego. And got picked up by Rezwan. And then, like, we go straight to the warehouse and, like, drop off my shit. Like, we didn't even go to his house. We go to the warehouse. And I had been to the Seedless warehouse at this point, so I knew where I was. But there was a party bus place next door to us, a party bus business. Like, their business was just to have cool limousine buses and stuff. And this is in 2000. This is in 2004, the very beginning of 2004, right after Mardi Gras. So we're talking March area. And maybe the end of February, but mostly I think I got there in March, and I started Seedless in the very beginning of April. So March sounds about right. And I got there, and essentially he's like, we're going to fucking mansion party. I'm like, we're going to what? He's like, yeah, we're going to not the Playboy Mansion. We're going to the Walmart Mansion. And that place was badass. Like, we went there, we took a party bus up there. And I met the dude that owns the party bus stuff, and, like, it seemed like a really cool time. It wasn't, like, it was a full party bus. It was, like, mostly it was, like, 10 guys from Seedless and a few guys from his business. And we're going to meet up with whoever the hell we're going up there and meet up with. Rezwan has the hookups all over the fucking place. He could call Snoop Dogg if he wanted to. He's got the number in his phone, and he'd answer it. That's the difference. Like, this dude, he's all over the fucking place. This night, we're at the Walmart People's Mansion. It's like one of the younger grandchildren or something in Rancho San Diego, wherever the nice part of San Diego is. One of those big, huge areas. Huge house. Crazy, insane security there. I think there's like corn. There was celebrities and stuff there. I didn't know anybody. I didn't really try to bother anybody. I definitely go up to corn and say hi. I just saw them over there, and I was like, okay, there's that dude with the hair. And I was fine. And we had a blast there. And then I saw the dude that owns the party bus get kind of beat up, but he squared up. He did his thing. That it was a big ass boy. It was this dude from Tennessee. I kind of befriended him through the night. I didn't realize he's gonna end up fighting the dude that drove me there, but that happened. And they held their own. They both did a good job, but old Tennessee got the best of him. But that's okay. Shit be happening. Sometimes you're gonna lose some. I didn't win all my fights. That's for sure. But about April, I started Seedless, but like it wasn't till really close to 420 that I realized how fucking cool this company was. Like I'm doing my first job is to fold t-shirts. That's it. That's all I have to do is put stencils on hats and spray paint them and fold t-shirts and press a little steam machine, put some Bong Tex t-shirts together. But the fun stuff came whenever the 420 party was starting to get big. And, like, we go pass out the flyers and stuff. We had really cool flyers printed. And Rez, and a few other guys, we just go walking up and down Garnett. We go up downtown. We go to OB. We go to PB. And we bounce around. We pass out these flyers and stuff. And oh, shit. This one night we were passing out flyers. This is like, I'm barely here. And I kind of had a dream, and I told Rez, I was like, some shit's going to happen. I'm going to have you back, bro. And I used to be a big believer in dreams. But we were passing out these damn flyers, and somebody, one dude, like this black dude, pretty big guy, slaps the flyer out of his hands. I ain't going that white boy shit. And we were like, okay, cool, all right. So we just kept pushing. We crossed the street, and we were passing out the flyers to other people. We didn't give a fuck. We were close to, we were on Garnet and, like, whatever the B street is, whatever that B crossing the street is. And this dude's yelling at us, all screaming and shit. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? He's screaming and yelling. He's coming across the street, pointing. And, like, we had just kind of met up, like, real random, just started saying hi to this one big-ass fool that Rez was homies with. And this dude's crossing the street, and that guy's like, what the fuck is that? He's like, and Rez is like, man, this dude's tripping on some bullshit. This big motherfucker's like, I got this, whatever. He steps off the curb, breaks his goddamn ankle pretty much. Boom, bam, he goes down the fucking ground. Like, he steps down, boom, he's down. Now this big black dude's coming at Rez. I'm like, oh, hell no, not my homie. And I just lit his ass up. Bow! I put everything I had into it, but it was a perfect punch. It's like, I didn't overextend or nothing. I just, I took that motherfucker off his feet. He went flying. It was like, I don't even know how to describe it, but he was straight. All his limbs went straight down. He's boom, landed. And then I knew the cops were right there, so I was dipping. And then I went under this bush, and these girls were walking by. I remember putting my arms around them, like, let me just walk with y'all. Let me walk with y'all. Let me walk with y'all. And they did. And then I tried to get their number, and they're like, nah, man, you're violent. I was like, well, okay. And I just kind of moved on. Thanks for helping me. Appreciate that. PV does get violent, though. When guys aren't getting laid, they get to squabbing. And I don't know why that dude was really mad about a seedless 420 party. We're just trying to tell him about a good time, you know? And I had to knock his ass out. But me and Rez were tight after that. He still talks about that little story. He's like, man, Frank decleated that motherfucker. She's flying. I hit the hell out of that fool. But the dude broke his ankle. That was crazy. Like, he really did mess it up, too. Like, I think he had to have surgery or some shit. He fucked his ankle all up. Just bow. Like, crazy. It's insanity. Now, after the build-up to the 420 party, like, I'm starting to see the hype around this company. We're having a blast. Crazy stories like this happen. I'm going to fucking mansion parties and shit. Oh, my God. This is a good move. Fuck Mississippi, right? I'm doing all kinds of shit right now. I'm 22. I'm doing some wild ass stuff. Now I'm here, living here. We're going downtown. We're going everywhere. Just having a blast. And, like, I'm really enjoying San Diego. And San Diego's being really nice to me. I got a job now. And now the 420 show's coming up all day. The only job I had during the buildup of the 420 day before the party was to roll joints. There's like 10 of us just rolling joints for like 8 hours before the fucking show, because we're going to pass out that many joints, because the 420 party is an event. They were at Kane's at this time, but they did get bigger. Like, the 420 shows, it ended up growing so big over time. Like, we had one in L.A. and here. I'm talking about the one in L.A. was slightly stupid with Barrington Levy, and then the one here in San Diego at 4th and B was Snoop Dogg and probably fucking E-40 or some shit. And then, but me and the homies, we were all in the damn car, or like we all went up with Barrington to perform at the slightly stupid show in like this Mercedes party bus that was turned out. It could be a work truck or whatever, but that was that big ass transit Mercedes turned out into a party bus, limo bus, whatever you want to call them. And old Barrington Levy, he's cool and all, but on the way back down, actually, we're good. We didn't have him on the way up. And on the way back down, he kept making us, like, he just kept playing Black Roses, like, different black roses in my garden. But he just kept playing it. My brother Kellen, he's like, hey, man, we can't have this no more, man. It's been an hour. And he started playing dubstep. He's like, what the fuck is this? And now that's much, much later. That is definitely not 2004. That was way later. Way later, probably 2010 or some shit like that. But the 420 parties were badass. And this was like my initial introduction to Seedless for real. Like, I'd seen it, I'd heard about it, but I'd never been in California living it. I didn't realize it. But back then, like, now you wouldn't think it because nobody really knows Seedless. But back then in San Diego, Seedless had a pretty big following. All the reggae shows they did, all the 420 parties, the Pepper, Cottonmouth Kings, all those things, all these local bands and tribal and all these things, they all kind of knew each other. And it was a pretty cool little community to be in, because where we printed our shirts is where they printed their shirts and stuff. So it was a pretty big company, King Graphics. Shout out to you guys. They ended up doing my shirts. Now, that warehouse was badass. Like, the first warehouse, when I first moved there for the Seedless Warehouse, was badass. It was off West Marina. That place was badass. It was three different levels. It was one big-ass warehouse, but they had built different levels. And there was, a latch out the roof. You go watch the fireworks at SeaWorld and all that stuff. My mom was mad at me for a while because I didn't go to SeaWorld. She's like, why haven't you gone to SeaWorld yet? I don't care. She's like, you're right there. It's right there. You're right. I have no desire to go to SeaWorld, though, mama. No desire. But I ended up going once I had a kid. Then I went. But before that, I had no intentions of going. I didn't care. But that warehouse was badass. We ended up having to move out, though. And we had to figure out where to go. And we're talking about going to, the business district and stuff. And it made sense. The rent was going to be cheaper and stuff. But there's this one building in Ocean Beach, California. It's like the biggest building there, period. It might not be, but it's pretty, pretty big. Like, you don't even really realize until you get inside how big that place really is. But we got that place, and it was empty as fuck. And, like, we had a lease Mercedes. I think it was an E300. We were in there doing donuts in that bitch before we moved everything in, before we built any offices in the back, any storage area, before anything was built in there, before any of those shelves or anything. We was in there doing donuts. But that was right after Hurricane Katrina. And here's another thing for Seedless. Like, I got to give them a little respect for this, the owner, Shay, and Rez. But Shay hooked it up. Shay, whenever I needed to go to Mississippi or whenever Hurricane Katrina hit, we were still in his, we were in between warehouses. We were running the business out of his garage. And his wife was like, you might want to see this, Frankie. And I went in there and I looked, and Hurricane Katrina was just like pounding away on my fucking hometown. I'm like, yeah, that's where I live. Like, that's where I'm from. I just came from there. I just left there. And that probably could have been the next year, 1 year later. I think that was 2005, not 2004. But yeah, because we had a good year in that warehouse. And then the next year, I think that was when we were moving out. Because we had a lot of fun in that warehouse, because I got memories from there. But let's finish the Katrina story. He saw me basically in tears. I was staring at the TV. They weren't falling out of my eyes yet, but I'm like, oh my God, this is wiped out. Because my mom had called me that morning, and she was saying how fucked up it was. And then now they're showing the devastation on the TV and stuff. And I couldn't get through to her no more. She lived right on the beach. I was freaking out. I thought my mom was dead. I did. I really did. And my little sister. They had to actually swim to safety. They had to, because they lived on the bottom story. There's two restaurants that are right in front of the apartments, and those two both got wiped completely out. The only reason her apartments didn't get wiped out is because they're brick, but she still had to get out of her house because I guess the water was above the beds, and so they couldn't stand on it anymore, and they went and ran upstairs to some neighbor's house and started knocking, but they had to swim to the staircase and stuff, or wade through water. Either way, it's probably scary as fuck to be in a situation like that, and they did it. They survived. Kudos to them. But I was worried about them. I was definitely worried about them. I'm going to take a little sip of water. Don't mind me. But yeah, that first warehouse, so many memories, rolling up all those joints, meeting so many people, because just a lot of skaters would come through there, just meeting so many people. George Clinton rolled through there. He's smoking crack, this motherfucker. George Clinton come through for a photo shoot. And someone hands me a big HD camera. They're big back then, the big old camera still. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I'll go walking in the office, and I pull around with the camera, put it on him. He had already pulled out his Pizzo, and he was sparking it up, and then he hit it right into the camera. Blew in there. It was like Seedless crack. Made me cough. But yeah, he thought it was hilarious. I'm like, oh shit, we can't use this. His manager comes up to me, we can't use that. I was like, I know, motherfucker. But had it been like times of right now, that video would probably go a little viral. But back then, you just had like that people make DVDs and you just play them randomly, like skate videos in the background and shit. But that warehouse was badass. Then we moved to the OB one, and that one in its own right is badass. It's got a lot of room for all kinds of stuff. It's had half pipes since the beginning, just in different phases, different areas, and they'll rebuild one somewhere in a different spot because they get old and wore out. They got two outside right now, and they just redid the boards. Seedless is still alive, if anybody's wondering. I don't know. Back then, Seedless is popping. Now they're not really selling too much of their own stuff. They're branding other people because there's so many weed clothing companies now, and then there's also just like different weed strains that also sell their stuff. So what Seedless will do is just kind of they'll have their designer design an awesome design for them, and then kind of sneak Seedless in the back, and it's just still branding from that angle. But we're also making a cut. I think $1 off. Not me naturally, but Seedless is making a cut off each sale or something like that. They might even charge it from the get-go just to get their dollar from the beginning. But you get a free design, so I don't know if it's free. They probably charge you too. Not, ain't nothing free in this world. Nothing. But Hurricane Katrina definitely wiped shit out. Came back from Katrina because I flew down there. I don't know if I mentioned that, but whenever I needed to go, like Shay helped me buy a ticket to go down there, gave me his credit card to go to Costco and buy anything I wanted. And then I had a company card, so whenever I get down to Mississippi, I went to Walmart and filled up a rental car with everything. Well, actually, I flew to Birmingham, Alabama, not Mississippi, because that was the closest big airport I could get to. And then I just drove through the night and I got to my uncle's house like probably like 1 a.m. But people were still up, and the lights weren't necessarily on, but they had like candles going and stuff. And that's just how it is. You better have some candles because the generator is going to run the AC in the daytime. Nighttime, we ain't worried about it. But my mom was right around the corner. I couldn't get to her because it was below the railroad tracks and it was martial law and you can only go so far. And so the next morning I went and saw her, and she was there. I hadn't talked to her either, like that, but they told me once I got there, yeah, she's alive and stuff. So, thank God, because I hadn't talked to nobody. You couldn't call anybody, and like if they couldn't call out, you couldn't call in. If you got through, you were lucky. And as much as I tried, it was like that. But also down there, everything was knocked down. Like when I was down there, there wasn't no service. There's no service. There's no towers. All that BS about satellite stuff, that shit's coming from fucking towers. You know that shit. You better know. But I flew down there. I went and saw my buddy, BJ. I brought him formula. I brought my sister her snacks and stuff. My mom, I knew she wanted some snacks, so I brought those certain ones that she would like. And try to make everybody feel better. And I stayed for about 3 4 days going around town. Got my mom settled in up at my grandma's house, but my grandma left town because she's smart. Smart people leave. They don't, I don't feel like dealing with all that wind and stuff. I like it though. I think hurricanes are pretty fucking crazy to be in, and it's intense. You're in a little bit of danger. You definitely know, and you feel it. It's electric in the air. It's in the air. Danger's there. I went around. I just remember taking a bunch of pictures too. I just gotten a camera. I visited Japan. Like Seedless was sending me to Japan too. Like as soon as I started working for Seedless, they started sending me to Japan because they knew I tricked them, told them I spoke more Japanese. I didn't really know it very well back then, but I pretty much knew it because the 420 party, they had some Japanese band play, and like some dude, I was sitting there pressing shirts. It was like a hot, it's like 400-degree machine where you just press it down, you press two buttons, it goes, and then it steams on that little velvet. What are those goddamn? I don't know, some little like plastic thing put printed onto your shirt, pretty much. And this dude was about to touch it. I was like, ah, abunai, damn it. And I said, damn it, abunai. Like, don't do that. It's dangerous. And he's like, yeah, you know Japanese pretty much. Like he started speaking to me in Japanese. And like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about, man. But they went and told the boss that I spoke Japanese. And then he's like, oh, you speak Japanese? All right, we'll send you to Japan. And then I met like all the guys, like even the owner, the guy. Basically, they have a distributor in Japan that sells Seedless clothing. They also sell music and all kinds of stuff. They were affiliated with this band, and the owner of that distribution company, Shu, was there, and I met him. And then after I started working there at Seedless for a while, it probably took like 3 months for me to get a promotion. And then they made me start helping the production dude. He got mad and he's like, "Hold on, man, I ain't teaching you my job." I'm like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "No offense to you, but I'm out of here." And he went and quit. Like right off the bat, just quit. As soon as they moved me in, because he saw me typing on a computer. And one of the things, "Oh, you moving in as college boy, bullshit. We've been friends forever. You're gonna bring this guy?" And he's like, "He's here to assist you with your paperwork that you can't do. You can't do the paperwork. I need somebody to do the paperwork." He's like, "Oh man, I'm out of here, bro. I'm not teaching him how to do this shit. He can figure it out himself." And that's what I did. I figured it out on my fucking own. And I was production manager for that company for a long time. A lot of the stickers that you've seen around town, the Seedless stickers, all that stuff from way back in the day, I fucking had a hand in ordering that stuff. I didn't ever make anything, but I felt like I made stuff because I was the one, I was a production guy, but I was really just coordinating everything. But we were coordinating all kinds of product to get made. We were selling in Tokyo. We were selling in Costa Rica. We were selling in Europe. We're all over America. We're in, just pot stores, like not necessarily pot stores because they weren't pot stores, but smoke shops. We're in smoke shops all over the nation. We're in Japan. I'm feeling like we're blowing up. Like we're doing really good. I got a job. I'm like, "Yeah, man, this is great. This is a good situation. Good move, Frankie." And for a long time it was, until 2008 hit. And that's when everybody got laid off. Everybody got laid off, including me. I was one of the highest paid. I got laid off, and as a joke, I mean, he laid me off from the production job, but I could still sell all those clothes and stuff that I've been selling at the shows. And then I also started the Kobe Swap Meet Seedless sales. I started that shit. I started the selling it at concerts and stuff. Nobody was doing it. I'll do it. I'll get out there and sell that shit. I'll be selling. I'm down for the sales. I'm down to make the sales, bro. Kind of forget where I was going with all that, but basically, I got laid off. 2008 hit, I got laid off, and I made a joke shirt that said jobless. Like, I sat with the production guy all the time. I know how to do graphics design by this time. And it's not like I'm not really good at it, but I know how to do it. And you look up on YouTube how to do it. Like, okay, how do I bend this right? How do I blend these? What do I got to do to layer this right so that I can make it a print, get t-shirts printed with it? And then also had friends that did graphics design at the print spots, and they'd clean it up for me. They'd be like, "This is what you did wrong. This is what you did wrong. I'm going to help you out. I'm going to clean it up because it's hilarious. I'm going to make it look just like Seedless." And Seedless is tricky because everything's lowercase except for the second to last S, and then there's a period at the end of it because it's a statement. And then it's a Cooper font, which is it's on every computer. But they made that shirt. I made that shirt. I made like three shirts for me. And I was just wearing them at these concerts that I was selling stuff at. It didn't even dawn on me to make my own shirts at that time. Like, I remember making some shirts. I remember the owner, actually, one night I was going to fly to Japan. And it was like we were printing shirts till like 4 in the morning because we had a print shop in the warehouse at that time. And me and that guy were printing until 4 in the morning. I guess at some point they thought it'd be funny to print me a "fuck you, hooray for me" shirt. And it's just basic block letters on a black shirt. "Fuck you, hooray for me." It's the original "fuck you, hooray for me" shirt. I made probably like 300 of those after I decided this was a good idea. And like I sold the hell out of them. I was selling the hell out of those shirts. I didn't even think about it. I was selling stickers too that said "fuck you, hooray for me." And I wasn't really thinking anything above it. I thought it was a funny joke, but I did sell. Like, I did two rounds of those, and I was selling them for $5, but I was selling those shirts so cheap, and I didn't even care. That's probably why I sold out all the time. It was like $5, because I produced them really cheap, because I bought them so cheap, and I produced them, and I just wanted my money back, essentially. I didn't want to go too crazy, but when I went to Japan, I was wearing that shirt. I was wearing the "fuck you, hooray for me" shirt. And they're like, "Who's that? What shirt is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, this is mine. This is my stuff." Because my grandpa used to say, "fuck everyone, hooray for me." And so I was like, yeah, this is what I say. And we thought it was funny. He's like, if you ever make those, I want some. So now that dude in Japan, I know he wants some, right? He wants a little bit of this. Now back to 2008 and the jobless shirts, that was a joke to me. I thought that shit was a joke. I thought Fuck You, Hooray for Me was a joke. And then I was jobless. I made the jobless shirts, and I'm selling them at the concerts and stuff. And I don't know if you know East County or San Diego, but there's a clothing company or a clothing shop in one of the malls. And they got two shops now, but at the time it was just one shop called 619 Underground Clothing. And like, they prided themselves on having some shit nobody had. And they saw my shirt and they're like, hey, what's up with that? Like, I just made these as a joke. He's like, I want a dozen for my store. Whatever you got to do, you ain't got to make a bunch of them, but have a dozen out and just have a dozen ready for me. Like, I'm going to reorder them because those are going to sell. And so I had that guy ordered. So I made it, and then I made some Fuck You. I made some more Fuck You shirts, and I made a Fuck You Pay Me design. And I made a Fuck You I'm Off the Clock design, and I started getting all designing. And then all of a sudden I had a line, and I was like, oh, shit, I got shirts, people buying them. People buying shirts with my signature on them is pretty cool. If I had the money for advertising and the management ability that I do now, I don't have the ability. I didn't have it then. I was all over the place. I was getting, you know, I was young. I was going crazy. I didn't have the focus for anything like that. I wouldn't be able to do this, like this story. I wouldn't be able to sit down and do this and tell myself to do it. But, man. That's just, I don't know. Seedless was cool. Jobless was cool. And, like, things are selling for me at these shows and then at the swap meet and stuff. So I'm still making money. And I wasn't expecting for these shirts to really pop off. But we got pregnant. Me and Tanisha got pregnant. And we were living on Newport Avenue. And I remember that, like, being a crazy thing. But when she was pregnant, I had an opportunity to go to Japan. I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to go to Japan and sell this gear. I wanted to go see my dad, my family. Typically, I go a lot, right? I might have mentioned that with you in the podcast. But my dad, he definitely paid for it this time. He was paying for me to fly. Typically, Seedless was paying for, like, the last 4 or 5 years. I was going to Japan 3-4 times, going to partying in Tokyo, Shinjuku, Shibuya, Roppongi, all these places, bouncing around in Tokyo, essentially, and having a blast with the Seedless, the Seedless crew there, essentially, because they're selling Seedless, and they're badass, they're fun, they're selling all kinds of stuff, really, music, other clothing brands, hemp band, they're kind of hippiest type vibe there, even the music was on those lines there. But come a time, me and Tanisha are pregnant, I'm about to fly to Japan, he asked me, do I want to bring her, he flies her out there, too. I found this to be a good time. So, I borrowed some money from my dad and I bought a ring and I put it on a ring. I proposed in the middle of Tokyo, like in the middle of that major crossing in Shibuya. It looks like, you know, Japanese Times Square. You've probably seen in all kinds of movies, like Lost in Translation, that where everybody just crosses. But when everybody crossed, I was walking her through it because you got to do it. And she's never been there. And I talked, like, I had my sister there, my stepmom, my dad, and I had all them filming. We're just all kind of acting like we were all filming. And then, because it's lights everywhere. And it's definitely something you could film. And it would be a good video for you to remember what happened while you were there, right? But in the middle of that spot, I dropped to one knee and proposed. She screams, get the fuck out of here. What the fuck? And I'm like, you're going to say yes? Yes! And then she had caused such a goddamn commotion. People are fucking clapping and stuff for us. But she did. She was screaming out there. She said yes. We were pregnant. It seemed like the right thing to do. And it was a pretty cool place to do it. I feel like it was kind of creative. I don't know if too many people do. I don't even know if it was necessarily a romantic spot really either. I don't know. But so the next day I went to Tokyo, and after I did the proposal stuff, I had my own proposal to go do in Tokyo. So I went down to Tri-8 Distributions and spoke to Shu, and I presented my six designs, And he basically told him, yeah, no problem. We'll put him in the next trade show right next to everything else. And it was no big deal to him. He was like, yeah, we'll just put it in there. It was a big deal to me. I was like stoked. I was like, oh my God, I just sold my product in a foreign country. They're going to make an order. And I was probably making like 2,000 bucks off of them, like a season. And I only had like probably 2 years of business. But so that was probably like 8,000 a year or something like that. It wasn't anything big. It wasn't big enough to change your fucking life. So it didn't turn into nothing huge. But I did have stores. I had stores in Japan. I had stores here. I had multiple stores here as well. Not just 619, but Visions, Puff and Stuff, a couple other places. They were carrying my product as well. And then, I don't know, I had the kid. And, like, it was either invest in advertising or just feed the kid. And I decided to just feed the kid. I didn't really believe in jobless. I didn't believe in it. Hold up or fold up. That was something I believed in. But I think it's just too big of a name and it's just not catchy enough. And so I was like, I had this, you know, just had to realize this is it wasn't a failure, but we're just gonna call it quits. We're gonna shut it down. And so jobless clothing and hold up or fold up have not produced anything in a long time. I still have a bunch of fuck you, hooray for me stickers. Sell them to you for $5. Holla at me. I just kind of have them saved away now. They're like memorabilia for me now. But getting laid off from Seedless kind of sucked. But I ended up having my own business. I was producing shirts for other people too. I'll never admit this to YG's face, but I did make his first t-shirts. I actually was the producer. He sent me his artwork and it was trash. I just forwarded it. And the fucking printer ran with it. I figured he'd clean it up, but he just ran with the artwork. It was just something offline, too. It was for the YG Ham, Yokohama Giants Ham, like that YG for baseball. I don't know if you pay attention to Japanese baseball, but it's called YG. That was his first logo, the Yokohama Giants, YG Ham. But they were trash, man. I don't know. I got two checks from Def Jam Island Records, though. That was pretty cool for $750 a piece. Like, nowadays, I'd have taken a picture and put that on somewhere. I didn't care back then. That was pretty rad, though, to have those checks from him. And then I just do other places like PB Boxing. I had a yogurt spot. And then, like, you know, just I'm picking up different jobs and stuff to make it. And then I also started at Grossmont College at that time. I started Grossmont College, me and the baby mama. We were finding out that we were not going to get married. He was about 2 years old and we were fighting nonstop and it was just not good. Not healthy. The cops would come because we were yelling so much. Nobody's getting hit, but they thought they were going to arrest me when they showed up. But they didn't. I didn't need to be arrested. They didn't arrest me. I was not hitting anybody. She was the one slamming shit. And essentially, we knew we weren't going to work out. We were kind of living together. And she was staying at another dude's house most of the time. And then whenever it was her night with the kid, like whenever I didn't have night school, or whenever I was in night school, she'd come over. And I essentially started going to Grossmont full time. And I started taking on just basically general ed. I wanted to get better jobs for my kids. So I'm sitting there looking at my kid. He's like, when he was born, we moved out to East County. I'm without a real job, so I don't have anywhere to go. But it worked out perfect because somebody had to be the babysitter, and it was me. So I got to be there with my baby for about, you know, the majority of his 2.5 years. Like, dad was stay at home dad, and then I'd go to school. And that was about it. Like, all my work could be done at the computer even then. Like, I could do everything on the computer. And eventually I moved out because I couldn't handle it. But I also had met a girl, and, like, I just had to get the fuck out of there. Like, even that girl had been in that house, and I was sketched. I was like, oh, fuck, man. Tanisha's going to show up one day, and she's going to fight this Japanese girl. Kaede was a real sweetheart, though. She was a nice girl. And I'd hated for anything like that to happen, but I don't think Tanisha would beat her up, but she'd definitely give her the evil eye. And then, I don't know, I think, hell, Kaede could probably beat her up. If she tried, Kaede is bigger than her, but not big for a Japanese girl. She's not big. She's still, she was just tall. And super cute Kaede was. And then I moved into my buddy's house, who had a grow house at the time. So basically, we were just fucking trimming weed at that point. So now I'm trimming weed. I'm kind of selling these shirts, but not really. I'm just going to getting rid of what I produced. So there's still an income from there. And I'm going to school, trimming weed. And I had it pretty set up, because I also had like some financial aid coming in, because I was I was pretty much broke according to everything they're doing. I wasn't doing my taxes right either. I ended up owing for a while. I didn't know how to do all that shit. I didn't know how to run a business, nothing like that. Had no clue. Now, this is kind of an important part of the story now. So I've been going to Japan. I've been talking about going back and forth to Japan all my life, and now I'm dating a Japanese girl at Grossmont College. I'm going to wrap up this episode kind of now, because the next episode will go more into that. But essentially, this Kaede is she's an essential part of the story of why I go to prison. So that's definitely a thing. We're gonna scratch episode 6. So 7 is Japanese labor prison. We're gonna talk about it. The next episode will be me going into how I met Kaede, and then how, like, the next summer, like one summer I went over there for two months, like whenever I was jobless or whatever, I went over and I kind of interned at the Tri-8 distributions, but mostly I just showed up and then I go float around Tokyo. And that was kind of an excuse. I told my kid's mom to let me go without bitching about me leaving for 2 months, because I wanted to leave. I went all the whole summer vacation. I went and had a blast in Japan the summer of 2012. Me and my dad probably spent like 10 grand, he said, just floating around Tokyo doing crazy shit for the 2 months. Badass times, great times. Didn't work out with me and Tanisha, and I needed a break. So I went back to Japan, and I floated around for 2 months, and I was getting fucked up. And I had a couple of little girlfriends over there. I wonder if I should say this. The only time I ever caught anything, I got chlamydia from a girl in Japan that summer, and that was kind of a bummer, to say the least. But she went with me to the goddamn hospital, and we both got I don't know how they do it here, I guess, but they put like a needle in my arm, but like an IV, and like just dripped it through me. And then once it was all in me, I could leave or whatever. And then I felt great after that. I got rid of it, whatever. Like, that was the only time I caught something, but that was 2012, that summer. And then the next summer is whenever I get in trouble, and that's where I'm gonna leave this episode. Is leaving you knowing that you're going to get the Japanese labor prison story next. And then essentially, I'll just, after that, I don't even know if I need to do this anymore, but I could probably just keep on telling stories, just period, to kind of figure out what we're going to put in the story, maybe add some more stuff and just kind of jog my memory on some stories. But I appreciate you listening. Thank you. Spread the word. Tell your friends about it. The next episode will be the Japanese labor prison story. I might do it tonight. I might do it tomorrow. Who knows? But it should be up soon. Thanks for listening. You're awesome. Have a good night.